Nope.
How to audit an engram. Or how to audit. But not why. We won't cover why this time. The auditing of engrams requires of the auditor more skill than any other single activity on which he can engage. It requires delicacy, tact, irresistible force, unanswerable determination, at the same time accepting the answers. It requires of a person that he, to be brief, knows his business. Now tell somebody who's been auditing for a long time that there's more to know about auditing. Always comes as a shock. Since they've always been auditing perfectly, they've never made any mistakes. All cases that they have addressed and approached have recovered and been full of verve and enthusiasm. Except those, of course, that fell on their silly heads. And if you want to know why, reason number one was that the engrams weren't audited out. And two, the auditing quality left something to be desired. And those are about the only two reasons why people don't get clear. Today, we can hang the auditor with the responsibility for the state of case. Give you an idea. I can look at a profile taken by an OCA or an APA. I look at a profile before and after 25 hours of auditing, and I can tell you what the auditor did wrong, just as fast as you snap your fingers. If the profile remained the same and did what profiles have been supposed to do for a very, very long time, at least the last century since they've had them, profiles are never supposed to change, you know. That's why we use them. We use them for a different purpose, not to evaluate a personality so much as to find out what happened. The profile remained the same. There was a present time problem in restimulation that the auditor did not have anything to do with. And if the profile dropped, by which we say had lower points at the end of the intensity in the beginning, we know there are ARC breaks on the line that have not been picked up. I can tell you almost the same thing with an E-meter. Before and after E-meter check. If the before check and the after check are the same in terms of tone arm reading and needle behavior, there was a present time problem in resimulation throughout the whole thing that the auditor didn't have anything to do with. And if the tone arm needle is higher and the needle behavior stickier or risinger, there was an ARC break or many ARC breaks still in restimulation with the auditor. Unfortunately, there's no arguing with one, a test which we have used as long and which we've proved up as well as the Oxford Capacity Analysis or the American Personality Analysis. The E-meter has been E-metering away for a very long time, and we at length fathomed the darkest, most mysterious secrets of the E-meter, that it reads the preclear, you know? You haven't found that out yet. You think it just idles around. All it reads is the preclear. If it is working, it reads the preclear. And if it shows a higher tone arm reading, and if its needle is less active, it's telling the truth. It's an accurate test. The E-meter is accurate. You have to be acquainted with the beast. You have to have used an E-meter as a bedfellow, a drinking companion, in many a bout with dances of death and that sort of thing, to really have confidence in the matter. When you are so expert with an E-meter that when it bops, you bark. And when you use it to find out what's happening with the preclear, not to keep your hands occupied and to avoid confronting, you will discover that the E-meter tells the truth. If it says there's an ARC break, there's an ARC break. It says there's an incident, there's an incident. It says there's a PT problem, there's a PT problem. Bang, bang, bang. And you can argue all you want with an instructor. For some reason or other, nobody ever argues with me. It's a dull world. But you can argue all you want with your fellow auditors. But you can't argue with an E-meter. It just sits there and keeps on dropping, bopping, sticking, oscillating, and telling the truth about the lies and upsets and truths, problems and ARC breaks, and state of case of the preclear. So, when we begin the tale of how to audit, we find we have to audit today with two tools, not one, written tests and electronic checks. Now, there's something that supplants an electronic check, and if you're terribly good, and if your altitude is excellent, and if you know your business from A to Izzard, you can supplant a meter to some slight degree with your personal observation of the case and finger snaps. The art of finger snapping must not be lost, because some fine day there may not be an E-meter. And you mustn't lose this art of finger snapping. Sounds rather silly. Sometimes walk up to somebody and say, how old are you, snap? And he says, 12. You say, 12 what, snap? And he says, 12 decks of cards. You know what you're listening to. 12 decks of cards, he says. You say, what? Yes or no? Is this a circuit? Yes. Circuits always answer, by the way. The only thing a circuit answers truthfully is it a circuit? Yes or no? Is this a circuit? Snap. Yes. Once in a while, you're getting yeses, you know. Snap your fingers. They say, were you a girl in that life? Yes, you know. Were you killed in that life? Yes. Did you eat potatoes in that life? Yes. Did you own a Buick car in that life? 1720, you know. Yes. Yes or no? Is this a circuit? Yes. They tend to blow, and then you tend to get answers. What people don't realize about finger snapping is the blurred answer is a yes. Person says, brr, something went by, but I'm not sure what. Yes. Answer was yes. You hit it right on the button. What you did was discharge a little circuit of some kind or another, and the truth came through. It leaked out somehow. A silence or a negative response, no response at all, is normally no. But that's less reliably no than brr. The individual says, something went by. I'm not sure what. Well, it was some kind of a yes. You said, was it 1,500 years ago? And he got brr. Something went by. I'm not sure what, you know, something. You're right in the vicinity of it. Oddly enough, it wouldn't have discharged at 1,300 years or something like that. Very well. We have the mechanism of the test, the mechanism of the E-meter. These are enormous assists, and I invite you to become experts on both. There are too few experts on both of these subjects. Many too few. Every auditor should know his business on that. Oddly enough, there's practically nobody with the man who wrote the test on this side of the water that really knows tests, how to analyze them. Another thing that happens with regard to tests, would fascinate you, is that auditors very often believe they're auditing when they're telling somebody about his test. This is very amusing. They're afraid to evaluate for the preclear. They think they're breaking the auditor's code. No, you go over on the instructor's code to give somebody a test. You know what the instructor's code is? You ought to read it sometime. It accounts for the activity and comments sometimes of your instructors. It's a very proper code. It was not written up idly. In the absence of the instructor's code, you don't get instruction done. In the absence of the auditor's code, you don't get auditing done. And oddly enough, analyzing a test for some preclear requires that you use the instructor's code. Never fail to evaluate for the student. It's very funny. Some auditors are very, very good at this. One in particular. She's easily the greatest test expert in the U.S. It's very funny to watch her with a test and some poor, defenseless preclear. He has delivered into her hands prima facie evidence. It's conclusive as far as she's concerned. She knows well enough what this thing is saying or not saying. And she says, look at that nervous dispersed. Look at that nervous dispersed. Look at that. Minus 80. Nervous dispersed. How can you live that way? You know, it has a delicate touch. Oddly enough, people sit right there and look at it. She just told him the truth, and that's what you have to do when you're evaluating a test. You don't gild it. You don't exaggerate it. You just tell him the truth. It's an entirely different presence than the presence of an auditor, and really quite different than that of an instructor. But it goes under the instructor's code. It's very amusing what you can do with a written test. It's quite factual, quite factual. There isn't anything wrong with evaluating for one, or for a PC, with one of these tests in your hands. There's everything wrong with trying to make the test worse than it is, just as there's everything wrong with trying to make it better than it is. A test just is, just like anything else. But you've got to sit right there and machine gun off and know your business exactly what the PC's up against. He wants to know, oddly enough. Very few of you realize, because you see so many of them, that a test which drops into the minus column at all is dangerous. It is dangerous. It shows incipient all sorts of whatnots. You know, just one point of it dips into the minus column. We get so used to reading these things that we don't understand too well. That people are very unhappy when that's below into the minus line. Your tests have graphs, and they're divided with a center line. And there is an area below the center line of the graph, all the way on down to the bottom. And any points inside that are dangerous. They are not something you can live with. And just because a lot of people are stumbling around and falling off curbs and under trams with them is no reason you can live with them. So the next thing that you never evaluate for the preclear, he shut out of this one because he wouldn't understand it even vaguely, is that tone arm and needle behavior. You can audit with a knee meter for a year without knowing all there is to know about an E-meter. The thing, however, does one thing that you can be sure of. And in an E-meter drill, you always make sure that the meter is reading the preclear by getting him first to squeeze the can so that you get a drop. You do that at the beginning of every session, every time you put the cans in his hand. There, the electrodes is much more elegant. You put the cans in his hands and get him to squeeze them. And if you get a third of a dial drop, you got it made. If that needle does anything else but drop when you turn up its sensitivity high enough, you've got a flub or a short in your meter. And don't use it because it just beats your brains out. Borrow another meter or look and find where the short is. A British meter, for instance, is rather given to shorting out in the cans. The cans come a little detached. That's because of the difficulties of aluminum electrodes. And if you want to solve that, just get a screw and screw it into the top of them and screw the wire down on them tight so that you have a positive fitting. That'll be remedied. But the main thing about it is, I'm just giving you an example of what could be wrong with a meter. You squeeze it and it goes backwards. Or it starts to fall and then rises. Or it does something like this. That meter is in disrepair. Now, that's the first thing that you must do when you start a session. And the first command of a session is really squeeze the cans. Not start. You want to find out if your meter's reading. You keep turning up your sensitivity knob until it reads enough that when the cans are squeezed firmly and let go easily, not any of this, you know, but just firmly down and up, and fingers not removed from the cans, but just squeezed and then let go easily. When that is done, the needle should fall, which is to say, go to the auditor's right, one-third of a dial, exactly. Now, if it is still hard to read, and you're still trying to pick up something that's very delicate, and you're trying to get the difference of 2 or 3 months, one way or the other, in a date, you have to turn up the sensitivity dial further. But for ordinary running, the needle is too active if it has a high sensitivity dial. Now, actually, the drops you want show up best on a third of a dial. You know, you can always get drops. But if you're picking out a date out of the middle of a bunch of confusion, of one kind or another, and you want those little tiny movements that show that earlier is a better answer than later, and you can hardly detect the difference, I turn it up a little bit and get it to drop a notch or two on the earlier, and you'll see that it doesn't drop very much on the later, and you can magnify the reading. And it's just like you took a big magnifying glass and put it down in front of the meter needle, you know, when you turn up that sensitivity. That's exactly what that does. Now, after you've gotten your reading, remember for general running to turn it back to the third of a dial drop. Now, if you remember where a third of a dial drop was when you set it up, you just turn it back to that, because it's very disturbing to the preclear every few minutes to ask him to squeeze the cans. You've already determined that the meter is working. Now, you set the meter, then, as the next step in an auditing session, and then you find out if the meter is working mentally. Now, you've already checked it against two universes. You've checked it against the physical universe. Is the meter there? Is the current flowing through these particular lines and wires by giving it an impulse? Does it have juice and that sort of thing? Are all answered under this one? That's a fourth universe situation. Now, we check it against the third universe, that of the body, and which is squeeze the cans. Now, that's not good enough to tell you all the way or convince you. Now, we're interested in you. We're not interested in the PC. We want to find out whether you, the auditor, know positively that the meter is reading the PC or not. If you don't have confidence, now, I don't say this is to teach you, you understand? I'm talking about every session. I'm talking about every session, you understand now? We have to be interested in you at this point in every session. Otherwise, you're going to make some silly mistake somewhere along the line. You're going to flub it. You're going to drive yourself mad trying to find an incident on some meter that isn't reading. Now, because it worked in the physical universe is no reason it worked in the body universe. So we checked the body universe, didn't we? Squeeze the cans. That checks the body reaction added to the physical universe. Now let's add the second universe, which is number 3 on your list. Universe number 2, which is the mind. Is the mind reacting on the needle? And that's what we have to be pretty sure we demonstrate to you. We have to be pretty sure we demonstrate this to you, the auditor, right at that point. Because otherwise, your confidence in it is very, very poor. And you're going to find out someday that the meter tells you a great deal of truth, and that you know this truth is useful to you. And what you do, there's several little cute tricks, one way or the other. This is the crudest of them, but the essence of them. And this trick you don't do because it breaks ARC with a PC at once, but it's the model trick. You reach over and pinch him like the dickens, watching the meter the while. And you'll find out that when you pinch him, the pain generated will register on the meter. Now you want to find out if it's going to register in the mind, not on the body. Got it? You want to find out if the mind is reading on this meter. So you ask him to go back to the moment of pain and go through it. Recall the pain, not only recall it, but be right there and be pinched again, and you'll find the needle will drop to the same extent if you coax him into that little incident called a pinch. The needle will drop the same degree that it dropped when you pinched him. Now, you saw how far it fell when you pinched him, didn't you? You see? Now, when you ask him to go back to being pinched and go through it, obviously he's not being pinched. And you will have to admit at that point to yourself that the meter is reading his mind. There's nothing else there to be read. Now, just in case you still felt doubtful in this very crude test, which you don't do every session, I'll give you the one you do. Just in case you felt doubtful about the thing, the next action that you would undertake would be to pass him through the incident again. And every time he went through the incident of being pinched, you would get a drop on the needle until it erased or desensitized, which time you'd have a null needle. You understand? Now, if you do that, you have the positive proof that the individual's mind is in some fashion impinging on his body, and his body obviously is impinging on the meter, and the meter obviously is working in the physical universe, and you have removed mental phenomena through these 3 stages to your own visibility. Now, if you don't know what an e-meter's doing after that, get some auditing. Not a snide remark, it's a truthful one. Because it must be, you need glasses. Now that's the crudest test, but the most valuable one. It's not the one you use all the time, but it's the one you must know about and must have performed on some luckless being. Now you know for sure that there's some kind of a picture was made, or some kind of an impulse occurred in the mind or somewhere else that had nothing to do with the body. And now you've seen for the first time the e-meter directly register a mental image picture. And it was a mental image picture of a pinch. And then you will understand why, when you run in a mental image picture of somebody who is just being stabbed, shot, beaten, or clubbed, why your e-meter drops. Got it? There's no more esoteria than that about the whole thing. And when you get an incident that drops the most, it must be the incident in which he got himself handsomely stuck. And what you're reading is not his lies about it or anything else about it. I don't think a lie reaction would occur on the meter if lying hadn't been beaten into him as a bad thing. If you have this reaction in an incident, there must be physical pain in the incident, and you will find later on that all misemotion, all apathy, anger, antagonism, grief, or anything else, any one of the misemotional scales from the bottom up, apathy, grief, fear, anger, antagonism, and oddly enough, boredom, drops as a little theta bop sort of a thing. All of these misemotions are totally dependent upon physical pain to register on the meter, which is quite fascinating and tells you why a meter will register on a non-clear person only. All misemotion is dependent for its force and power in the bank upon the physical pain which occurred before it. And I don't care if it was a million years before it or a billion years before it or an hour before it. If there's misemotion on it, it sits on physical pain. Any secondary depends for its power on the physical pain, unconsciousness, exteriorization, engram preceding it, always earlier than it. And if a person says, "Oh, lover boy, you were leaving me, weep, 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 weep." You know, she kicked the bucket sometime or another, or the last time he left a few thousand years ago, he killed her dead, or something of the sort. There's physical pain involved in this thing. Therefore, misemotion is nothing in itself and releases mostly when physical pain is run and contacted. Very well, we have this thing called a meter, and we don't want to pinch the preclear. All we want to do is find out if the thing is working. So we reach over and put our fingers at the back of the girl's neck and say, "Has a boy ever kissed you there?" We test it out on emotion, because it lies on top of pain, and we are not so sadistic that we wish to cause him infinite pain just to get a meter read. Cause him infinite pain for other things, but not for a meter read. Got the idea? And we reach over with our fingertips and touch the boy on the neck and say, "Has a girl ever kissed you there?" Now, you don't have to do that every session, but you certainly have to find out if this person is reading on a meter. Now, you could be so happily fooled in Dianetics and Scientology these days as to try to get meter readings on a clear. A person is clear, and he sits down, and he wants an assist, or to change his ideas around, or do something. And you put the e-meter in his hands. And he apparently reads, and the thing reads on the body, and it falls, and it does everything else. But it doesn't read on any incidents anymore, because they aren't there to be read. And you won't get much of a drop. You'll touch the body with your fingers lightly and say, "Has a girl ever kissed you there? Has a boy ever kissed you there?" The opposite sex. Although sometimes it works best when you ask a boy if a boy ever kissed him there, come to think about it. And you get a null. Thing doesn't drop. Well, such a question, in the first place, doesn't produce the mental bank reaction that is necessary to a read. However, you can always put an engram into a clear. Don't try to keep it there very long, but you can always put an engram into a clear. You can reach over and pinch him. And then look at your meter real quick, because when he runs out the pinch, it goes drop once and disappears. He blows it. At the same time, as he comes upscale and is even more able, he can mock up the pinch to read on the dial without being pinched. And this is very confusing. But remember, it's a mental image picture. Mental image picture reads against the body. The body reads against the meter. And the meter is read by the auditor through the physical universe via his body. And we hope not via his bank. And that's the way you read one. So this is an interesting little picture that you stack up on reading banks and minds. You got that? Now, there's another way to go about that. Another way to go about finding out whether the thing worked or not. And if you're auditing rather newly and you seem to be in difficulties with PCs, so just ask him if there's any ARC breaks on the case, and you'll find out whether or not the meter works because it'll drop. It's saying yes. You know you've laid some in. And you get a session started somewhat in this fashion. Well, if your meter's tuned in, you say start. And we get in to what I just started to cover there. Tune in your meter somehow or another, but if you test it with an ARC break, you start the session before you make that test. And your session is started while you're testing it, and you're beginning to run it. You ask him if there are any ARC breaks with the environment, any ARC breaks with himself, any ARC breaks with past practitioners or auditors, any way you want to phrase this, and you'll get needle drops. Now, the meter is saying yes and no the same way that finger snaps are answered yes and no, and this you must understand. For your purposes, no further real analysis is needed until you get into the deep guts of an engram, at which time stuck and theta bop become very important. For early purposes, the location of incidents and that sort of thing, on a rather crude look, you only need to pay attention to one manifestation, and that is fall. Fall. And when the needle bobs from the auditor's left toward the auditor's right as he faces the dial, the needle, when it drops, says yes. And it says yes to the degree that it drops. And all it is a yes-no machine, for your purposes. And when it doesn't drop, it's saying no. And when it does drop, it's saying yes. So these falls is yes. Got it? And if you got the idea of it feels embarrassed at being found out, you see kind of a crude explanation of why and how it is saying yes. So you're interested in it saying yes, and you're interested in saying no. If it doesn't fall, it's saying no. If it does fall, it's saying yes, and that's all there is to it on incident location. It's as simple as that. It's a silly, simple proposition. People start reading vast significances into this thing one way or the other. They're in difficulties at once because, one, they are not sure that it's reading the preclear, and two, they are not at all sure that it is saying yes or no or telling a lie. And some people get all wound up in if the needle falls, is it then telling a lie? No, a lie registers on emotional charge. An emotional charge depends on physical pain. And a lie wouldn't register if there weren't physical pain connected with lying. Johnny, you just tell one more lie and we're going to have your silly head. Well, that's it, Johnny. Where's the cane? Where's the ruler? Where's the strap? Or shall we just lower you into the stove and burn you up? And other ordinary routine parental correction measures. The reaction of lie was brought in erroneously by what is laughingly referred to as scientific police methods. The one thing the police have invented and that they have stuck with and has done them very, very well is what they call the billy. It's a short club loaded with lead. And beyond this, they have not advanced very much. Very little, very little. Their scientific methodology is crippled by the fact that they think their lie detectors, every time they register downwards, are denoting a lie. And they can't sort it out. They don't know what they're reading, and it's as simple as that. Now, wherever and however we read meters, all you have to do is disentangle the thing one way or the other, and you will find that it is accurate enough and goes over a long enough period of time and is invariable enough to suit even you. When the needle falls, it is saying yes. It's not saying, yes, this is a lie. It is not saying yabbity-yabbity-yap. It's not saying abracadabra or anything of the sort. It's merely saying yes. And when it doesn't fall, it's saying no. You got it? And it's just exactly like finger snaps. Nothing more to it than finger snaps. You ask the person, yes or no will flash. Well, the way it flashes on a meter is to fall. Now, when you see the needle doing a little hunt and dance of varying width, one theta bop is different than another theta bop, but inside one theta bop, you get the invariable dance over the same expanse. You know, it's the same motion, repeated over and over and over. If you see it very clearly, it's got a little hunt at the top and a little hunt at the bottom, and it's going across a small space. And they can be very tiny or they can be very big to the degree that you're close to the actual exteriorization. Now, when you're running an engram, you run into the exteriorization area, and you'll see this dance begin. And that says he's exteriorized. It means he's away from the object and so forth. And if you sit there asking about the early part of the incident, with a theta bop going on in front of your face, I'll have your ruddy head. Because it means you're at the end of the incident. That's all. I mean, it's just as easy as that. So you better know one real well. A little theta bop starts in, says, all over. I'm out. I'm on my way, and hereafter I will read it in a very detached way, I can assure you. You got a theta bop going. It says you're at the end of the incident. So this little dance turns up, you're at the end of the incident. All you have to know about that is to get him back to the beginning. If you can't do that, you'd better get the exact moment he went out of his head. If you get the exact moment he went out of his head, you will get the exact postulate of irresponsibility that makes him run so funny after you've hit an exteriorization. You see, the way they go out of their heads is to say, I'm not responsible for it anymore. And it's a common denominator of all such postulates. I'm not responsible for it anymore. They say it in various ways. They stick themselves in various ways and so on. And they make a long string of postulates at that point. But that's about all they can do right then is make postulates. So they make plenty of them. But it's irresponsibility. And if after that, the thing is reading all unreal, all written real, and no responsibility for it, I can't do anything at all, yappity, yappity, yap, you just got somebody that's out on a theta bop line. And you'll see that the meter is theta bopping. But you can bring him back into the incident and get the incident kind of wound up in a small, tight circle of some kind or another, and you can get a theta bop and a stuck. You can get a theta bop and a stuck. All mixed up. You're just jamming the whole incident, you see. And it would theta bop if it weren't so stuck. So the funny part of it is you can turn up your sensitivity at that point, and the stuck is overwhelmed by the increased sensitivity, and the theta bop will show up again. But it's been submerged. Now you've got him then at sort of a yo-yo point. He's stuck in the incident, and he's outside of the incident all at the same time, and it's all unreal, and one of the things he'll tell you at this point, it's all unreal, and he feels so detached from it all, and so forth, and you don't understand the mechanisms of it. He just make a sucker out of you, that's all. So the theta bop says becomes important at that reading stage. That becomes important. Now let's take this other thing I just mentioned called stuck. When a needle is stuck, it is stuck. Now, there are various ways a needle can be stuck, and there are various things which stick a needle. But the final analysis is it sticks. Now, when it sticks and rises, it is stuck and being added to. And what we call a rising needle is actually an additive needle that is stuck already. When you see the needle start soaring to the auditor's left, and it just rises and rises and rises and rises, and the tone arm comes up higher and higher and higher, it's stuck, and the stuck is being added to. And the exact mechanism is this. You missed the point where he needed trouble, where he needed help. He got into trouble. He needed help. You missed it. And the remainder of it all is an ARC break. And whether he articulated or not, or knows it or not, this is the facts of the case. He only forgives you for putting him through it. He never forgives you for letting him dodge it. If you think it is kind to let a PC out of an incident, then you've got everything coming to you that you will get from irate PCs. That is cruelty, definition of, to let a fellow escape. from an incident that he knows he should go through. That's cruelty. Don't classify it in any other way. Don't say it's careless. Don't say you flubbed. It's merely cruel. Your PC reacts that way. So he got stuck. Everything afterwards is an ARC break, and you get a rising needle. Or he got stuck, and you chewed him up somehow or another, or he didn't get the question straight, or a big confusion entered in, and ever after that, you have a rising needle. Well, a rising needle, then, is a stuck plus an ARC break, and the way to take it apart is to take off the ARC break. Run the ARC break off the thing. And you'll calm this one right on down. Now, as far as the stuck is concerned, it tells you that some part of the incident containing effort, regardless whether it contains pain, which it usually does, and unconsciousness, which it usually does, but certainly effort, some part of the incident didn't move any further. And now we get another manifestation. Now, the E-meter reads the body, doesn't it? It reads the mind's impingement on the body, right? Well, don't you suppose the body reacts in some other fashion? Don't you suppose in addition to relaying the information to the E-meter, it might not act in some other way? Does that ever occur to you? It might be some other manifestation you could read. If I sound a little sarcastic here, it's because I think most of you need glasses. Not glasses to make the astigmatism go away, but just glasses that force you to look in some fashion or other and see what's going on in front of your face. If an E-meter can read it electronically, don't you think that an electronic mechanism known as a body reads it too? And it's not enough to read just a meter while you're running an engram. That's not enough. Any time, this is the way I used to run engrams, any time an individual's physical manifestation is not changing with regard to an engram, we can conclude two things. One, he's not in it at all, at which time you give your easy, yakety-yakety-yakety-yak conversation piece type of pre-clearing. Not in it at all. That moment, I always grab him by the nape of the neck and say, well, let's see, where is it? Boom! They're in it. Or, remember, he's not in it at all. Or, he's stuck in it. And the manifestation of being stuck in it would be some manifestation that he would normally not be manifesting in a general physical environment. A peculiar manifestation, then, means he's stuck in it, and a conversational, out-of-it manifestation means he's out of it. And if that manifestation doesn't change, you are not moving the incident, and that is all there is to it. He's stuck somewhere. Throw him in. Move him along the line. Move the incident along the line. Help him out. Help him out. He's stuck. He's sitting there, and you get the same twitch of one hand. You know, he starts twitching a hand or something, you know. Or he starts moving his head in some fashion. He keeps on moving his head in this fashion. Do you suppose as he was being hanged, he kept on moving his head in the same way that he moved his head when they were putting the rope around his neck? No, no. If he's stuck at the point where they're putting the rope around his neck, which is unlikely, he's usually stuck at the point at the bottom of the drop. Which moment his neck comes up like this while you're running the incident. And if his neck continues in this position as he, quote, runs further into the incident, you can absolutely be sure that he has not moved. If his physiological manifestation doesn't shift and change as you go along, you're not moving the incident. That's all. I used to run them exclusively on body manifestations, which is what gave birth to the E-meter. I said, let's read the finer manifestations and not ruin auditors' eyes. But boy, you're not going to get away with auditing a PC unless you audit him through an incident. So why stick him in one? Thus, there's this stuck manifestation that you're interested in as you run an incident. Theta bop means you've finished the incident. Or, pardon me, not finished it. You've run along the track toward the end of the time plot. And the stuck is simply stuck. He isn't moving. And you'll find out both of them are accompanied by physiological manifestations. You begin to watch your PC physiologically. You can read him physiologically at the same time you read him on an e-meter. And those two are very, very valuable mechanisms and manifestations, so you better learn how to do them. Do them both. Watch him. And if he's going right on, stretched out, with his hands flung wide, and he's running on, I could confront the top of the mast, and I could confront the porpoises, and I could confront jibsail, and I could confront the dibsail, and I could confront the mibsail, and I could confront the foremain, topsail, gallant, scale, skyscall. You say, oh, come off of it. He'll sit there and count all of the sails off, and he'll count all of the officers off, and he'll count all of the muster list off, and he'll go on and on and on, count the grains of powder that are in the powder magazine. He's not getting any place. Such a question as, what is there around there that you can't confront? Pulls him into the middle of the cannon blast, which is exactly where he is stretched out on the deck and has been there for some time. And why didn't you notice earlier that he wasn't moving physiologically? His body wasn't changing. You see, a body can be flopping and just keep right on flopping. You're stuck in the same point. You got him stuck at the same point of the incident. If this change doesn't shift and alter, he isn't moving along the track and he's avoiding something. And you should give him a little more interest in that spot. That is the least that you could do. You could say, I'm very, very fascinated with the breech mechanisms of cannon. I understand that cannon with breech mechanisms of that type open up with a handle. Is that right? Well, you open up, boom, there he is, you know. He's a sucker for this kind of talk. He never gets wise to it. Never gets wise to it. You want to get him blown up? Why, you say, now, can you read the writing? You know that he's been blown up in this incident by gunpowder, let us say. You know he must have been close to the can or had something to do with it because there's a gunpowder can around here someplace or another. You say, can you read the writing on the top of the can? And he says, well, that's very silly. There's no writing on the top of the can. It is on the side. Boom! So, we first have to know our tools somewhat. And knowing our tools, we can then do something, but do something about what? Well, we have to have a pre-clear incession, and the definition of incession is talking to the auditor freely and interested in his own case. They're just 1-2, that means incession. If you don't do 1-2, why, you're not going to have any wonderful time of it, let me assure you. It's going to be very leery, steery, and unsteery in the wrong places. And if your PC isn't well under your control, he just isn't being steered well. And he can't be steered well because he isn't in session. And you don't steer people easily unless they're in session. That's about all there is to that, about all there is to know about it. His case isn't going to advance unless you have his PT problems out of the road and ARC brakes patched up. So these things are sort of continuing as problems right straight along the line. These are problems to the auditor. He keeps these things patched up one way or the other. You know, a PC can develop a PT problem in the middle of a session. Probably never occurred to you. The PT problem is how to get the auditor to stop auditing me, you know. It's a perfectly legitimate PT problem. You see ARC brakes adding up, ARC brakes adding up. Ask him, do you have a PT problem? Oh, yes. No. Well, is there a PT problem have to do with the session? Oh, no, nothing like that. Any PC problem? You know, the needle falling, saying yes. PC says no. And the needle says yes. You say, well, the present time problem have anything to do with the room? Oh, yes, you know. Does the PT problem have anything to do with me? You see this thing go now, there's a little something there. Well, what's the problem? It's how to stop an auditor from auditing you, you know. A slight present time problem. You could actually handle it if you want to. handled as a PT problem. He isn't going to go anyplace unless it's handled. You, of course, got him to a rest point someplace or another. You got him to a point where he wasn't troubled too much. And you decided you'd check into the condition of the session. You found a PT problem. It's probably perfectly all right at that time to run a PT problem for a few minutes. We're getting into CCH0 now. Now, keeping a session going, knowing the tools, keeping the session going. We've already taken up in an earlier lecture the fact you had to have a PC. You had to want to help him and so forth. We've got all these conditions, and they're all answered up very nicely, and there are not very many, really. We have to have something else that nearly everyone overlooks. And they get the weirdest ideas concerning this. I want to know how you would drill for oil successfully without an oil field. Now, let's go over that again, because it's a simplicity that we could miss. How can you mine gold without gold to mine? How can you shoot pheasant with no pheasant? This, of course, is a tremendous problem, and it comes up in auditing. It isn't no preclear. It's a much more delicate problem than this. You cannot audit an engram without an engram being there. A lot of PCs say, well, he just put an engram there, and the auditor gave me the engram, and the auditor presented me with it, you know, irresponsibility, irresponsibility, irresponsibility in all directions. The engram just came from someplace. I don't know where it came from. The auditor might have been mocking it up around me. Something of this sort. We don't care what his reaction is. His reaction is simply as exact as this. You can have lots of holes and go into lots of holes and pull out lots of rocks, but you can't mine gold without gold. There has to be gold there. This point's easily overlooked. And the other thing that people do and have to do with regard to this is find the oil field or the gold mine and keep it there while it is being drilled or mined. You have to hold somebody in an incident. So in addition to the repetitive question, you also have to run another process of keep the mine there so it can be mined. So you're just trying to keep the mine there and keep him going through the mine. You're trying to keep the engram there and keep him going through the engram. So all of your auditing commands, no matter how pretty, won't work any more than an education won't work if it's the only thing with which you're going to mine gold. You can't mine gold with an education unless you have some gold to mine, right? And you can't run an engram at all, without an engram being there. And getting it there and holding it in place and auditing it while it is being held in place is all very germane to an auditing session. As a matter of fact, in auditing engrams and trying to clear people via engrams and so on, you certainly aren't going to clear them of engrams they haven't got. Furthermore, you're not going to even be able to audit out things they haven't got. The other thing that you do is you fill in the gaps all the time when you should be listening. You're busy thinking, and that is a very, very common thing with an auditor. And almost any auditor does this sooner or later. He misses. All you know about this thing you're going to mine is what the PC and the E-meter tell you, and the body. That's all you know about it. And you go adding in the bridges yourself and guessing it all and putting it all together yourself, you're going to be fooled. People have automatic explanation machines. He said, I was on the farm, then I was in the spaceship, and then they threw me out of the airlock. And they say, well, that's very easy. The way he got on the spaceship, obviously, it landed, and it kidnapped him and took him on. The reason he killed the captain, he resented this and that sort of thing. He's probably trying to signal the enemy fleet or something of the sort. So they execute him, put him out the airlock. Well, fine, we've got a complete incident here. And that's fine. Now let's find another incident. You never asked the PC. And you got to ask the PC continually, or you don't have any incident to mine. As a matter of fact, the thing works out in such a way that he was on a farm, yes, but as what? As part of a landing party from a spaceship. It's like somebody in the class here the other day said, well, the man in the case, what did you do with him? Well, I let him be. And instructor was smart enough at this moment to say, be where? Well, be there on the ground with a spear in his throat, you know? Yeah, he let him be. All you know about an incident is what you're told, and you can't audit an incident if you haven't got an incident. If you think that incidents are invented and whipped up at the spur of the moment by the auditor, give it to the PC and then he audits it and so forth, well, that's fine. Get one run on yourself someday and change your mind. Thank you very much.